The moon mission under President Obama is scrapped, at least for now. A devastating blow to Kennedy Space Center employees.
I should have a plan B, but I don't have a good plan B yet. I could go back to being an aircraft mechanic, or maybe I'll stick around here and drive a truck. I don't know.
There's just kind of a cliff out there, and we're not sure what's on the other side of that cliff.
Families at least took comfort in President Bush's plan to return U.S. astronauts to the moon by 2020. But in February of this year, the Obama administration announced it was killing the moon mission, called Constellation, after having spent $9 billion on the program.
Today on Future Tense, the moon and beyond. Do human beings have a meaningful role in space exploration? And following up on our recent program on future developments in tourism, we'll get an update on the push to develop a sustainable biofuel to power the aviation industry.
Primarily, our interest is in allowing aviation to continue to play the positive role that it plays globally in connecting people and in promoting trade. We think that developing a biofuel that does not compete with food sources, does not change existing land use, takes advantage of marginal land environments is probably the way that you can have your cake and eat it too. And in that sense, what we're trying to do is show that you can strike a middle ground where you can actually do something for the environment, promote sustainability, and still provide for your energy requirements.
That's Dr. Bill Lyons, the General Manager of Boeing Research and Technology Australia. And more from him a little later. Hello, Anthony Fennell here, and welcome to the program.
The bottom line is nobody is more committed to manned spaceflight, to human exploration of space, than I am. But we've got to do it in a smart way. And we can't just keep on doing the same old things that we've been doing and thinking that somehow is going to get us to where we want to go. Some have said, for instance, that this plan gives up our leadership in space by failing to produce plans within NASA to reach low Earth orbit instead of relying on companies in other countries. But we will actually reach space faster and more often under this new plan in ways that will help us improve our technological capacity and lower our costs, which are both essential for the long-term sustainability of spaceflight. In fact, through our plan, we'll be sending many more astronauts to space over the next decade.
Barack Obama, forced onto the defensive, accused by his opponents of damaging the U.S. space program by refocusing its priorities and funding and killing off the costly Challenger project, which has sought to develop a replacement for the space shuttle. Now, President Obama's recently released official policy on space speaks of international cooperation and has been widely regarded as denouncing the former Bush administration's emphasis on unilateralism. Among those who've condemned the changes is Apollo 11's Neil Armstrong. Critics say the current US government is giving over its global leadership role in space and, just as importantly, downgrading the role of humans in space exploration, preferring instead to focus on robotics. Now, one of those with a keen interest in this issue is Professor Jim Bell, a planetary scientist with the Department of Astronomy at Cornell University. He's also a driving force behind the Mars Rover Project, a six-year study of the red planet's surface using two small robots. Jim Bell was in Australia recently to deliver a centenary oration lecture at the University of Queensland, and that's when I caught up with him. Professor Jim Bell, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
There's been debate about Barack Obama's recently released space policy and whether or not it's going to lead, in effect, to a downgrading of human space exploration. What's your view on that?
Well, you know, this is a big debate in the U.S. right now about the future of human exploration. Some years ago, 6 or 7 years ago, the Bush administration proposed a new plan to try to get people beyond low Earth orbit out into deep space. And frankly, it was a great plan as proposed, but it wasn't properly funded. And so it kind of languished and its goals shrank as its funding shrank, sort of typical situation of not being paid well enough attention in Congress and in the administration. And so it's been struggling to stay afloat as a new plan. In the meantime, The space shuttle was getting retired after nearly 130 flights, or more than 130 flights. While the space shuttle is wonderful and the space station is wonderful, they are in low Earth orbit. They're really close to home. And it's become a case of the shuttle and the station really aren't about exploration anymore. They're about medical research and delivery of satellites and payloads into low Earth orbit and delivery of astronauts to and from the station, more kind of routine activities. And personally, I would be happy to not see NASA doing routine things. You know, let's let the commercial industry grow into that area. Meanwhile, I want to see NASA doing exploration, going out into deep space, going back to the moon, going to Mars, asteroids.
So this is a necessary realignment then?
I believe so. I believe so.
Because one of the most, I suppose, controversial decisions in Obama's plan is or was to cancel NASA's multi-billion dollar human space flight program known as the Constellation Program.
Right.
I mean, that would tend to indicate that at least in the immediate future, human exploration is further down the pecking order. It's further lower down the tree.
Yeah, that's how it's been interpreted. I don't actually believe that's correct, and I don't believe the president believes it's correct either. If we stick with the current plan, the Constellation plan, it has been getting delayed and scaled back and trimmed down and delayed and underfunded. Then, by most estimates, and there was an independent presidential commission that did these calculations, at best we would be able to hopefully get astronauts back to the moon by the late 2020s. And that would be success for that program. And to me, that's a little bit disappointing to be back where you were 60 years later instead of thinking about going beyond and having the infrastructure to go beyond. But more important than me, as a university professor, I spent a lot of time with 18, 24-year-olds on college campuses. And I talk to them a lot, and we talk a lot about space exploration and the goals for spacefaring nations. And they're the ones who are going to have to carry out the plan when they're in their 30s and 40s and 50s. And frankly, they could care less about going back to the moon as a group. I mean, some of them are excited. Many of them aren't. But on average, hey, that was – my grandfather did that, you know. I think young people want to see us do bigger and bolder things and go to different destinations. So I worry a lot about the current plan.
Well, Michael Griffin, the former head of NASA, stated back in 2004 that he saw the single overarching goal of human spaceflight as being, quote, the human settlement of the solar system and eventually beyond. Is anybody, though, in the higher echelons of the space program in the United States actually talking in those terms in the current days? I mean, are they looking beyond Mars?
Well, nobody's really practically looking beyond Mars, except maybe some dreamers, which is fun. But, you know, the president himself gave a speech in April where he talked about the goal, the near-term goal for human exploration being getting people to the surface of Mars by the mid-2030s. Getting people out to asteroids, near-Earth asteroids in the mid-2020s, and developing the infrastructure this decade and early next decade to go back into deep space. You know, we had some of that infrastructure with the Saturn V rocket that took the astronauts to the moon, but that's all gone, and that technology is outdated. So part of the goal of the Constellation program was to replace that with a more modern heavy-lift kind of rocket, deep space rocket. But it never really got off the ground, as it were. It's been a sort of almost a PowerPoint rocket for many, many years with no real plan to develop hardware until, you know, 5 years from now or so. If the new plan gets approved by Congress, by the U.S. Congress, and that's very controversial, nobody really knows if it will, they'd actually start building that deep space rocket much sooner because they'd be offloading a bunch of the low Earth orbit work to the Lockheeds and Boeings and SpaceX and small companies and big companies. So if what was proposed by the president actually gets implemented, it has a chance of beating the schedule of the old one. But as you may know, this is all getting bogged down in the U.S. Congress because there are a lot of jobs at stake in politically important states like California, Texas, Florida, a lot of high-tech jobs there. And those senators and congresspeople from those states are resisting canceling the program and losing those jobs.
Now, you've been heavily involved in robotic exploration, most notably with Mars, with the rover experiment that's been going on Mars for the last six or so years.
Right.
There is a perception that the emphasis on robotics in space in recent years has really been about cost. you know, that it's cheaper to send robots, mm-hmm. and also politically safer mm-hmm. to send robots in case there's a disaster. Is there truth to that?
Oh, of course. Both of those are true. But neither of those is really part of a visionary exploration program. Look, I believe that robotics and humans should work together in exploration. There are many, many things that robots can do very, very well. And I classify them into the sort of reconnaissance category. How big is that asteroid? How many rings are there in that part of Saturn's ring system? How many rocks are there on the side of that hill? Things that you can write a computer program for a computer to calculate or a robot to calculate, fly past, make some relatively simple, in quotes because they're not really simple, measurements, and do the basic first order reconnaissance of places. Robots do great at that. That's what we've been doing for 40 years now. And that's all wonderful, and that's going to continue well into the future. It's a economical, efficient, safe way to explore, using robots to project ourselves out there and not put people in direct danger. But there comes a point, I believe, when you're exploring a place, be it the moon or the Mars or even the Earth, where you go beyond first-order reconnaissance, and now you're not necessarily wondering how many or what size, but you're wondering why. How did this happen? What are the pieces of the puzzle here to reconstruct? Geologists and others who study the Earth are doing forensic exercises. You know, they're trying to decode a crime scene, and they're using their experience and their gut feel and intangible kinds of logic and reasoning that the human brain is really good at and that no one has written a software program to do. So the robotics can't answer some questions, and they tend to be the deeper questions.
And so you need humans to actually go out there and do that, to go out and look and assess and make decisions.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that, again, it will be in concert with the robotics. It will not be hopefully doing things that robots could do much easier. But I don't buy the argument many people make that, instead of sending people to Mars, let's just send 100 robots. Because I think the questions that we're going to have to answer and the puzzles that we're going to find are not going to be ones that a software program, a robotic silicon-based intelligence is going to be able to figure out. It requires human brains.
And you've actually written that it's necessary to have that human exploration to keep the public interest going in robotic exploration, that without that human involvement, the public just aren't going to be as interested in sending robots to, say, somewhere like Mars.
I think that's absolutely true. I know many of my colleagues in the robotic and human side understand that. Many don't. But I firmly believe that there's a direct linkage between the success of the robotic program and the success of the human program both ways. And look, you know, I was trying to make a tangible argument for the need to send people to figure things out. But there are lots of intangible reasons to send people instead of robotics as well. I mean, we didn't go to the moon in the 60s and 70s to do science or to learn about the moon. Those were byproducts of the Cold War. You know, we went there to beat the Russians, right? And we went for national pride, inspiration, to honor a fallen president. All of these intangible things drove us to the moon in 1969. And I believe many similar intangible things can drive us to Mars and other places as well.
Why do you think there is this argument or this debate, if you like, in the space community? It almost seems to be those who support robotic exploration on one hand and those who support human exploration on the other. Why is there that divide, and how real is that divide?
I don't think that divide really is there. I think it gets a lot of some individuals give it a lot of play and a lot of attention. But, you know, in the trenches among people who are doing work in both areas, human and robotics, and there are people who cross those divisions as well. But among the people who are really working in those fields, my impression is that there's a strong recognition that they both rely heavily on each other, that they both complement each other enormously, and that both need to be vibrant to move the whole enterprise forward. So I don't buy this simplistic argument of it's robots versus humans. I think people are really thinking about it, realize that that's just too simplistic a case.
And just a final question. In terms of humanity itself, what does humankind get out of this type of exploration? What do we get from a better knowledge of what the surface of Mars is like, for instance, or an asteroid, or by returning to the moon, or even going to another planet? What is it that's essential? Why must we do that?
That's a great question. I think there's a couple of different kinds of answers. And one answer that you might often get from an aerospace engineer or a management person at NASA or another space agency is that there are sort of intangible trickle-down benefits that come from high-tech activities like the space program, the invention of the global positioning system. You can probably trace the transistor or other aspects of computer software back to various things done at computers in the space station and other projects. And so there is often an argument made for the sort of – there will be tangible benefits for people. We will have better technology, better knowledge of the Earth's climate, et cetera, et cetera. And some of those are very good arguments. Personally, I come at it from a slightly different angle. I think the main benefits that we get from exploring space are, honestly, similar to the benefits that we get from music and the arts and the theater. They're intangible. They inspire us. Exploration inspires people, children, teachers, general public. These activities educate us in science, technology, engineering, math. Lots of aspects of the space program are used all the time by teachers around the world as a way to talk about engineering and the need for mathematics and computer programming and provide some real examples. It took all of this to go to the moon, et cetera. And then finally, and you mentioned this, is just knowledge, scientific knowledge for the benefit of knowing it. There's no way to necessarily know that any of that knowledge will be useful in any practical way, but who knows? But I think that part of what we have the luxury of doing as a civilization is spending a tiny amount of our immense national wealth on doing these things that inspire, educate, and provide knowledge. I go a little bit further, and maybe this is controversial, but I think that if those intangible things aren't enough for our society, we probably shouldn't do them. I don't think we have to have a tangible benefit to do difficult things and to push ourselves as a species to explore.
Well, Professor Jim Bell from the Department of Astronomy at Cornell University, thank you very much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.